Tasting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
So you've left the bluegrass world completely, eh?
No, I'm re-entering it by way of the electric banjo.
Are you kidding?
No.
Oh, no.
My banjo is in the process of being electrified.
I never thought Garcia would go electric banjo. How's it sounding anyway? I'm really not familiar with it.
I haven't used it yet because it's not finished. I played a friend of mine's who did it by means of a very simple operation involving a ceramic cartridge from a stereo, scene.
Yeah.
Just taped underneath the bridge of the banjo. It sounds real good. It sounds better than a contact microphone or a magnetic pickup sounds like a banjo. I mean, it still sounds like a banjo, but it sounds like an electric banjo.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I'm going to use it, but I am going to use it.
That's
and
good.
I have another instrument, pedal steel guitar.
You tell me you're going to...
Yeah, I have that now. I've been working on it for about a month. And I should be using it with the band within, say, 6 weeks.
Great.
For some things.
Yeah.
Same with the banjo. This is just an effort to, like, broaden the scope a little.
Yeah.
Experiment a little. We're ready to experiment a little.
Oh, boy, that's great. I'm really glad to see you doing that. So, Bill Keith, you seen him lately?
No, but I've heard a lot about him. He's playing pedal steel guitar.
Yeah, that's what
he's been playing. Said. He's been playing for about a year.
Dropped the banjo almost completely, I understand.
Yeah.
He's going to England, you know.
Bill Keith?
Yeah, he and Grissman, what's his name?
Grissman. Dave Grissman?
Yeah.
Dave Grissman was by here just the other day, day before yesterday. I didn't hear, he didn't say anything about it.
You seen Shub's band?
That's got Dave in it.
Yeah, right.
I haven't seen him yet.
Bert Johnson left Shub's group and he's playing with us now. Remember Bert?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Played with him a few times.
He's alright, you know.
Yeah.
We can do stuff. Not much money in bluegrass, that's for sure. Geez.
Not by a long shot. But it's good music.
Oh, yeah, I love
it's
it.
Good music.
Great. You know, I was talking about that Echolet. I know a guy that's less than a year old. It's been used 6 months, and it's $800. I checked on the price. It's new. It's got a 15-inch Lansing. Let me have it for $300. Does that sound pretty good to you?
Well, the 15-inch Lansing...
Is that good enough?
I personally prefer two smaller speakers. What I use is 215s, 215 Lansings, two JBLs. In a dual, dual Showman cabinet.
Yeah.
I use a dual Showman cabinet plus high frequency horns plus my twin reverb.
Yeah.
The twin reverb powers everything.
How much was that, say, roughly, the whole setup?
The whole, the twin reverb is about $500. The dual Showman cabinet is $700 by itself, and the high frequency horns are about $250.
Yeah.
And that's what I use. That's what I use for my guitar. I'm thinking of leaving off the high frequency horns because there are so many highs in a Fender system anyway. It doesn't really need them.
Yeah.
Hey, Pig! Did you bring back my 32?
Yeah, it's in the car.
Okay.
Are we recording you?
Yeah.
All right.
What do you like better, rock and roll or bluegrass?
I like rock and roll. I'm not saying about what I like in terms of what I like to listen to.
Yeah.
What I like to play is the music that we play.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to call it rock and roll because not exactly, although it is, but it isn't, it's our music, and we've developed it because it's our music. I'm especially fond of it.
Yeah.
We've developed our own sound and it's our own music, and that's what I'm into. I still listen to bluegrass. I don't listen to that much rock and roll. I listen to almost everything, but there's some rock and roll I listen to.
What do you think of the airplane stuff?
Well, their most recent album I'm kind of prejudiced in favor of because I'm on it.
Yeah, I heard you playing best part of the whole album. But how do you feel? You played that, didn't you?
Played what? How do you feel?
And how you feel at Flat Top?
I played Flat Top guitar in that. And
My Best Friend?
No, I didn't play Flat Top in My Best Friend.
Who played that?
Skip Spence.
Did he play in that one?
Yeah. He wrote the song.
Yeah, I know.
I played... on today, I played the high guitar line.
Yeah.
And I played on Plastic Fantastic flat top guitar. And played on Coming Back to Me.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. And today, I think those are about the best two on the album. What do you think?
Well, I kind of am fond of of the songs that Gracie sings.
Yeah.
Like I like White Rabbit a lot.
Yes, I do.
And I like Someone to Love, which is the arrangement on the album is more or less my arrangement. I kind of rewrote it. I've always liked the song that she used to do with the Great Society, but it didn't have the chord changes weren't really very very interesting. And
here's your pistol.
Oh, too much. Thank you.
It's completely empty.
Oh, good. Shoot, you yours.
Yeah, it's empty. It's empty. It's completely harmless. In fact, it doesn't work. It's just a toy.
Yeah, don't enjoy it.
Oh, it's not. It hasn't got any. Oh, well, wait a minute. Maybe I'd better check it out.
Look, we don't need this guy anyway. He's
just... you were talking about you know, how the sound is your own. How does it sort of compare with what I guess people are calling now the San Francisco sound? I mean,
I'm not sure what they mean when they say the San Francisco sound.
Well, sort of everything that's coming out of San Francisco, I guess the airplane mainly, you know.
Well...
How does it compare, or, you know, would you, cause does it fit in?
I would say that we're a perfect example of the San Francisco sound, since we're from San Francisco.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm not sure about that term. See, that's somebody's idea besides mine. I would say...
Perfect example of what?
A perfect example of anything you'd like to, got her. Like, I'm not sure what they mean by that, San Francisco
yeah.
sound stuff. There's a similarity in the sound in San Francisco groups because they like all the San Francisco groups, tend to do things kind of long.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to have a certain sound because you hear them in the same halls all the time.
Yeah.
But it's not, there's not really that much similarity in the musics of each particular band. Like, the Quicksilver Messenger Service sounds, for example, a little more like us than, say, Big Brother and the Holding Company, but neither of them really sound very much like us. We don't sound anything like the Jefferson Airplane, you know. I mean, it's a matter of fine points.
Yeah.
Like, superficially, it might all sound similar to the point where you could say, oh, that's for the famous San Francisco sound, but actually, if you listen to this stuff, it's not really very similar.
Well, let's take, say, okay, this San Francisco... These groups you just mentioned, compare them with, say, the Birds or the Animals. English groups, you know, what do you have?
Well,
to
it's
say
different. It's different.
It is.
It's different. It's a different sound, but it's as different from each of the bands in San Francisco sound as different from each other as they do from everybody else, I think.
Well,
to me,
throughout the
do.
Country, I think this.
I think that the San Francisco scene, the music scene, is like healthier and there's more stuff going on in it. Than there is any place else. The musicians are all young musicians, and we all steal freely from each other, because we all play together. We're all friends.
Yeah.
You know, but we all, you know, like, we spend a lot of time with each other. You know, we all listen to each other,
yeah.
And it's like that. And we've all gotten good together. You know, we've all gotten improved over the past year or so, playing the same gigs, the same weekends, and stuff like that. And getting together and jamming and so on.
Is this recording, Mike? Are you sure?
Yeah.
All right. Well, what do you think about, well, what's your definition of a hippie? You hear so much about it, you know, and they write it up and everything. What do you...
Well, I would say, I'm not sure that I have a definition for that. I would say that it's somebody who's turned on, and they could be turned on anyway. But just like someone who's in a sort of a forward motion, they might have been called progressive, at one time, or but it's motion, it's and creative energy, at its best. It's just a nicer, a better way for people who are in a creative community to look at things.
You like the term psychedelic to apply to all this?
It could, but any of those kind of terms could apply.
Uh-huh.
Because the scene, I don't think the scene excludes anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's more inclusive than exclusive. Because it includes, like... you know, everybody has their own particular way of going about things and getting things done and doing things. our way of doing things has to do with integrity and how we feel about what we're doing. Like the reason that it's been that, like, we've been together for almost 2 years, and we're only just now making a record. Yeah. And the reason we've done it that way is because in the past we've had all kinds of offers, and we've had all kinds of things, but we were never in a position to be able to control what we were doing. So the way it is now, because we held out, because we thought we were worth something.
Mm-hmm.
The way it is now is we can do anything we want. We have control over it, over our product. You know, it's not going
to
be chopped or changed
from
or
start to finish. You're
it's ours, right? It's our stuff, and because it's our stuff, we are the ones that will take full responsibility for it.
Yeah.
And record companies don't want you to do that and stuff like that. We just held out until we could have it under those circumstances.
Just Warner Brothers?
Right. Yeah. The point is that we're not trying to be famous or rich. We're just trying to make our music as well as we can and get it out.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've created a demand for it to some extent. We, you know, it's a matter of pride with us. Artistic pride, because it's what we do. It's the only thing we do is make music, you know.
Yeah.
And because it's the only thing we do, and the way we make our livings and everything else, is we devote a lot of time and energy and thought and actual work into it, like we practice every day.
You think the airplane has the same view, or do you think they're going more commercial now?
I think they have the same view. If their stuff has a commercial thing, it's because they've been victimized by the record company to some extent.
Yeah.
In that they don't have the say over, like they have a producer. Their producer decides what their sound will be like sometimes. Hopefully that won't happen on their next albums. Although this last album was more a product of them than it was of their producer.
Yeah.
But it was their producer's idea to have a lot of echo and a lot of reverb and so forth. And they're not really too satisfied with it. But the airplane is concerned about their music, and they're concerned about being musically good, because they are really a talented organization. They have good all the people in the Jefferson Airplane are professionals, and they're good musicians, and they work well, and they have great ideas, you know, Marty and Paul are really good songwriters.
Yeah.
Yorma's really a good guitar player. And Grace is a fantastic musician.
Jack's pretty good.
And Jack Cassidy is a great musician, too. And so is Spencer, the drummer. And they're all really into something, you know. They like their music, and they like what they're doing. Would you answer that phone?
I didn't know
I was
threatening. Okay, well, now, at Fillmore Auditorium, these kids come in, and are they phonies, or are they really in with the music? Do they really are they really hippies?
Well, who knows? The point is that they're really people. Anything else that they are doesn't alter the fact that they're really people.
Would you more clearly define that? What you mean by really people?
They're human beings. I don't mean any particular kind. I don't mean my kind.
Well, they're just people.
We're all people, is what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying I don't want to exclude anybody or include anybody, because whatever the world is up to, everybody in the world is in some way responsible for it, or in some way a part of it. Just by virtue of the fact that we're all here. What somebody's idea about themselves is doesn't really alter the basic fact that they're somebody. Whether or not they're all musicians or music critics, I don't know. It doesn't matter to me, because on the level of the musical part of it, there are musicians there that like will recognize when something musically groovy happens. If they don't, I will. But just for some reason, with the music that we're playing, when something groovy does happen about it, does happen, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody knows about it. Nobody has to tell anybody. Because it's like, it's obvious music, you know. It's
mm-hmm.
it's loud and there's excitement about it, but the excitement comes, it's a kind of reciprocal excitement, you know. Like, we pick it up from the audience, and the audience feeds it back to us, and you know, and we feed it back to them, and like that, you know. it kind of works back and forth. It's always, like in any kind of music you play, it's always groovy to play for an audience that's responsive. And I found the audiences at the Fillmore Auditorium and the Avalon Ballroom to be pretty responsive. Mm-hmm. And like, when something groovy gets going, you know, we can usually depend on a little support, you know.
Yeah.
And if that wasn't happening, if that excitement wasn't happening, the music wouldn't be, much fun to play.
Well, it really helps. I mean, of course, now San Francisco knows Grateful Dead real well, and so they can really get excited because they know what to expect and what, you know, more new things are going to happen. But if you were to go to New York now, what do you think your reception would be like there?
I don't know. We're going to New York pretty soon, so we'll find out. But the point, what we've heard from the people that we know from New York who have been here is that we'd really kill them in New York. Whether or not that's so is something that I don't know about, because I don't know about New York and I don't know what it's going to be like when we play there.
Well, I guess it's a known fact that this San Francisco music scene isn't anywhere else in the country or the world.
Right.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Musicians happen to show up in San Francisco.
Here's the thing: is there aren't really that many musicians in San Francisco, but there is a fantastically good scene going on in San Francisco. It's just San Francisco is a good place to live,
yeah.
You know, and incidentally a good place to play. But first, it's a good place to live.
Yeah.
And having a good place to live is kind of like, you know, where you can like do what you want and feel the way you want. And, it has something to do with your outlook toward things. Like in the San Francisco music scene is unique in some aspects socially. For example, there isn't any competition going on in San Francisco. Like, the bands here don't compete with each other.
Yeah.
You know, we don't, like, go to a job and try and play each other off the stage. The bands here do things for each other. All the managers, like, the managers don't do things the old cigar-chewing manager way. You know, like when our managers go someplace, they go just the way they are around the house. They have long hair, you know. Mm-hmm. They wear outlandish clothes and beads they talk like the people on Hay Street do, because that's the way they are. That's the way we all are, and we're not sacrificing any part of ourselves in order to do business. See, like when we go into the business parts of things, when we talk to lawyers or when we talk to the vice president of Warner Brothers or someone like that, we talk to them just the way we talk to our friends. Mm-hmm. We're not, you know, we're being
Don't
out in front,
anything.
Right? We're trying to change the whole atmosphere of music, of the business part of it, as well as just the way it is, just by dealing with it on a more humanistic level, because it's a valuable commodity. It's you know, it's an art, and it involves a lot of people and a lot of things.
What'd you think of that article, Dropouts with a Mission?
I don't know which article was.
Oh,
what
that's
paper was
the
it?
Newsweek one. About
oh, that one, right. I thought that it surprised me that it was in Newsweek.
Yeah, right.
It didn't surprise me too much because they'd taken the pictures and everything.
Yeah.
But, for example, if we hadn't heard in advance that that article was going to be a favorable article, we would never have consented to appear in pictures for it. We wouldn't. They wouldn't have had too much cooperation in that case.
Yeah.
But because it was a favorable article, they got a favorable reception, and it
Why
was.
What's that title though? Dropouts with a Mission.
Well, you know, who knows? Journalists have their way. No, it doesn't. Like, as far as being a dropout goes, yes, I'm a dropout.
Of what?
Drop out from anything, you know, like when I was teaching music. I was teaching music because it was a way to exist without having to do a work thing, you know, put on a collar and go do 8 hours a day, you know, and do all that stuff. I'm not interested in doing that. What I was interested in doing is making music. And I've been willing to, like, put down everything else for that at one time or another. So in that case, socially, I'm a dropout, but the result has been because I was willing to, like, take a chance and say that I wanted to play music and I don't care what anybody else thinks about it. It put me in a position where now I'm starting to be successful at it, which I never dreamed I would be, you know, because I was willing to, like, work at it like I might have worked for a job. But I, you know, I worked at it out of love for it, not because I had to eat or because I had to make car payments or any of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
It was always natural to you. It was always there.
Right. But only because I decided, you know, I just made a decision at one point that what I wanted to do was
Well, if you had enough money to, say, exist, would you have not taught and spent all your time with your music, you know, trying to develop it?
I think I might have.
Yeah.
I think I might have. The teaching was valuable, incidentally, because it made me think about what I was doing.
Valuable to me.
and it was, you know, it might have been valuable to a few others, like to you or to any of my students who might have learned something. Like, that's valuable. But it's not really my thing to be a teacher, you know. Like, my thing is to play, not to teach. But I'm glad I learned how to teach, because in learning how to teach, I learned how to play.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you ever, at the time you were teaching, did you ever think that you'd grow long hair, wear different clothes than you had been wearing then? I mean, was the San Francisco scene as we know it now
then? In existence?
Yeah.
No, but all the same people were around.
Yeah.
You know, all the same people were around. We were all just doing different things. We all knew each other then, too.
Yeah.
Yorma used to play at the Tangent.
Yeah, I remember.
And David Freiberg of the Quicksilver Messenger Service used to play there. David and Michaela.
Other McCree's uptown.
Right, and you know, all the elements of this whole scene were around in those days, playing at different gigs, playing at dumpy little coffee house and stuff like that, and making $5 a night or something like that, and then like really scrounging for the rest of the week to make it. Yeah, you know. It was really a hassle to exist, and you couldn't exist just by playing. It was just virtually impossible. Mm-hmm. You know. But we were all holdouts at that time. We wanted to play a particular kind of music. We wanted to play it well. And that was our big concern. And if we got jobs, that was another matter. Well, the playing in the rock and roll band started out as the same thing.
What really made you put down the banjo and pick up the guitar? I mean, I know it was a gradual changeover.
It was just a gradual changeover. I mean, I just got like, I got interested. Well, the big thing was that, like, I was playing the banjo, there was nobody to play with. There was no place to play. There was no way anybody could hear me play. And most of the people who heard, there was not enough, like, popular interest in bluegrass music for it to ever be worthwhile in this area.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to be, you know, like gratifying, where you could where you could work your ass off for a week and then play something at the end of the week, and somebody would say, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, most of the people just didn't know enough about it.
Yeah.
You know? And it was, that's what happens when you take up something that's like pretty esoteric. You have to sort of accept that. I didn't want to do that particularly.
Mm-hmm.
I got into rock and roll music through the jug band. When I first started playing, I started playing rock and roll.
Yeah.
My first guitar was an electric guitar.
Elvis Presley days type stuff, you mean?
Chuck Berry. Stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I remember when you were the Warlocks and at Magoo's, you were doing, Last Time, you know. And
right,
like
popular
that.
Stuff.
But you still had your sights on what you're
doing. Well, at that time, we didn't know what we were doing. We were just screwing around. We were just trying something.
Well, do you think the English groups, you know, the Beatles starting Rolling Stones, helped you get into the...
For sure. Right, because the Beatles music was interesting music and good music. The Rolling Stones music was not too much of a surprise because I'd listened to a lot of rhythm and blues in those days. And early Rolling Stones music was similar to that rhythm and blues, only not as well done as the older records. But the Beatles were doing something new, and they had good musical ideas, and they had a great thing going for them.
Plus,
seeing the movie A Hard Day's Night and stuff like that, it was a turn on.
Yeah.
You know, it was very, very up.
Yeah.
And because it was up, you know, I've always preferred things that were a little on the upside.
Yeah.
And so me and my friends got together and it worked out that way.
Is that why you think the long hair has come about from the Beatles with their English?
Oh, yeah, it comes from a lot of other things, too.
Yeah.
It comes from a lot of other things, too. I'm not sure, why or how. I just have it long because I sort of like it, you know.
You said you were, say, a dropout from society. Well, you might say in that respect, but the fact that these same friends who had short hair in the old days are still around, and now they have long hair. Would you say that you're just
It's just that now we have a little more nerve than we used to have because we know there are more of us.
Yeah. You know? Distinguishing yourself.
Right. In those days, there were just a few of us around. Like, and the musicians were, in those days, all the ones that were playing at Coffee House, were doing exactly the same shit as we're all doing now. I mean, in terms of our lifestyles. We're all living, like, low-budget existence, kind of. You know, we've learned to, like, to get into things that are groovy rather than expensive. You know, we've developed certain tastes by like living on the sort of on the low edge financially, mm-hmm. and it's made us think about other things besides making it, because we've seen people be successful, we've seen them be unhappy and successful, and that's not where it's at for any of us. You know, we don't care whether we're successful or not, because we've been unsuccessful for years. You know,
yeah, it doesn't bother.
Right, it's no big sweat.
Well, if it comes along where you're successful and fairly wealthy,
then maybe we'll see if we can find a better way to do it, you know, a better way to be successful and wealthy, a way that's more rewarding to us, in a way to spend our money in such a way so that it brings about more enjoyment for more people, or more something for more people, more food certainly, mm-hmm. you know, like a lot of what we make now is just like money to live on for us and our friends and anybody around who doesn't have any bread or doesn't have anything. Because there are always people around who need something,
mm-hmm.
and I don't need anything. I don't really want anything. You know, I've got instruments and some. You know, I mean, like I know I can eat and stuff like
yeah.
that. It's not. I'm not really worried about anything. And there's nothing I really want except to be able to play more music and to get better at it.
Well, how's this war in Vietnam getting?
Well. Not directly at all so far, except that it's getting starting to get hard to buy things like cymbals and guitar strings, certain kinds of things. You can't stock lots of them because they're making bullets out of them.
Yeah.
And that, like, is hitting us where we live a little bit, in that we're starting to get an idea that there's something going on in the world that nobody knows about
mm-hmm.
very much, you know.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's a big mystery. And it's not really a mystery. The war is like an effort on the part of the establishment to keep the economic situation in the United States comparatively stable.
Well, if you hadn't already served in the service,
would I go?
That's right.
I wouldn't go. I would not go. I'm totally against war. I'm against it, not on any religious principles, but just because I could never kill anybody.
Yeah.
And I don't expect that in the natural course of things I would ever be brought to a situation in my head where I would want to kill anybody or where I'd actually be able to do it. I just don't want to do it. You know, it's like, it's a sin. It might be the only sin that there is. It's like anti-life, and I'm against anything that's anti-life.
But do you think, really, there are some people, of course, who don't care about killing, I mean, if they do, but don't you think the majority of the guys fighting over there don't want to kill, but they have to?
I don't know whether they do or not. I think if they do object to killing, I don't see why they don't object to killing and say, I'm not going to kill, I refuse to kill, I'm not going to kill anybody. No matter what you do to somebody, it's not as bad as killing them. You know, like, killing them is killing them.
Yeah,
that's sort of funny thing about it.
Right. And I don't see how anybody could do it. You know, I don't see how anybody could do it, how anybody could drop bombs on rice paddies or on little villages or something like that. I mean, it's really a horror to me. You know, it's not. I'm not intellectualizing about it. I'm only speaking from, like, newsreels and things that I've seen.
Yeah.
And what I've seen is, like, really horrified me. I don't understand why it's going on. It's not my idea. And I don't feel like I'm any kind of a subversive force, you know. I feel like an American, and I'm really ashamed of it lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I would, you know, I don't think the country has to do that. I don't think the people want it to happen. I think that other kinds of internal differences, you know, changes, like social changes of some sort, that would make the economic thing work out in such a way so that it wouldn't be necessary to kill anybody. There's bound to be alternatives, is the thing. I think that killing people is like the stupidest thing we can do. Just stupid.
Supposedly there's a purpose. I mean, what purpose is it? Of course,
the purpose is, the purpose in the case of the war seems to be so that whoever, the handful of people who have the actual monetary power in the United States will be able to retain that power. The whole idea, the whole power struggle, you know, is like, it's some kind of modern fallacy that by having something, you're gaining something. Like having lots of money or having a huge corporation or something like that. It all represents power. But the kind of power that is like, it's illusory. It's not real power. I mean, it's like worthless, you know. Well, like, if you're going to die, you're going to die, and all the things that you've done in terms of your power and your money and stuff like that are of absolutely no value. They're just like pointless. I think it's more important for me to live a good life than it is for me to be rich and powerful or something like that. But that whole drive toward power and wealth and I'm going to keep it all myself, you know, nobody's going to get any of mine, you know, is like, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's an insane attitude.
Well, okay, yeah, I agree. But on this Vietnam thing, say our own country was directly threatened, would you?
I don't know what I do. I don't know what I do until such time as that actually happened. I'm not going to worry about it happening, because I've got better things to worry about if I want to worry about stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. See, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think, in my own head, these are conclusions that I've just arrived at. They're not anything that anybody told me or anything I read. I've just arrived at them by, like, watching things happen. I think that the world needs to be, would best serve itself by like taking care of itself. Like if everybody in the world could learn to be responsible to the extent of taking care of what's going on right around them, to seeing that nobody dies in front of them, you know, to care a little, then the world's big problems would like disappear. I don't think there are any big problems. See, we're all human beings. We're all occupying this globe, and we have to learn how to live together. We have to, you know, we have to learn to get along, because we're like using up the earth.
Mm.
You know, we're using up our resources. We're creating weird situations in which we kill each other. We're destroying all the natural beauty around us. And we're destroying each other. And it doesn't seem like the way things should go. It seems like everybody should be like working in some way to advance the world as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, your music then is definitely working on this end to try and
in the extent that we are trying to make music in such a way that our music will not have a message for anybody. We don't have anything to tell anybody, you know. We don't want to change anybody. We just want to give people a chance to feel a little better.
Yeah.
You know, that's the absolute most we want to do with our music. The music doesn't enter into these ideas, and these ideas are just my personal opinions. They're not our way of feeling, like, because like everybody in the band has their own ideas about the world and about the way things are and stuff like that. Everybody's entitled to that. The music that we make together is something that's an act of love and an act of joy. We like it. You know, we really like it a lot. And if it says something, it says it in its own terms at the moment we're playing it. And it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, we're not telling anybody to go get stoned or to do something different or to drop out, or, you know, we're not saying anything to anybody. We're just playing
and singing. Take it for what they want.
Right, they can take it any way they want.
Yeah.
And that's just that's the way it's best.
Well, now when this scene moves, like, you know, say New York and the airplanes there now and everything, do you have any objections to moving with it from place to place?
None at all. I don't think I have anything else to do in the world.
You like to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Just because I like to see a lot of things that I've never seen before.
But San Francisco, will you always consider it a home base type
of thing? I was born,
yeah.
I think of it, I guess, it more as my home than any place else, really.
Mm-hmm. Where are you going to play in New York?
I don't know. We're just going.
Yeah.
We don't have any jobs lined up, but I think we probably will by the time we leave. We're just going to go. We even thought of going there and changing our name and just, you know, being an unknown group again and seeing if we could do it.
Could make it, huh?
Sure.
Name some, in just short phrases, name some in things and out things, things you like and things you don't like.
Things I like and things I don't like. I can only tell you about things I like. I don't know what I don't like. There isn't that much I don't like. I like just about everything.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't have any complaints. You know, I don't have any complaints. I don't have any bones to pick. And I, you know, I
Good way to be. Yeah. So, what about this is just I'm asking you. What do you think of Buffalo Springfield?
I like them.
You like them?
Yeah, I like. Have you heard of Moby Grape?
I've heard.
You should hear them. They're good.
You really like them? Huh?
Yeah, I like them a lot. Skip Spence.
Yeah, he's well rhythm.
Rhythm guitar player.
Is he better on rhythm than on drums? Because he's a good drummer.
Hard to say. It's hard to compare the two. He's good at both. He's also just beautiful on stage. I mean, he's a great showman, you know.
Well, when I heard My Best Friend, I thought that was you. You know, I heard that flat top, and it never occurred to me that was...
Yeah, well, they did two tracks on it. Like, Yorma and Skip both played flat tops on the first track, and then Yorma added the electric lead over.
Yeah. Yorma, would you consider an outstanding guitar player, or different, or standard?
He's an exceptionally original guitar player, and he's got a lot of beautiful ideas and real good technical facility.
Embryonic Journey, that's, I really like that. Huh?
Yeah, beautiful guitar player.
It sounds like a lot of dirty guitars on it.
Yeah, a few well-chosen words about Matt Cates.
We've never had any personal dealings with Matt Cates. I've only heard about him. I don't want to add any hearsay to the thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Matt Cates...
is a cigar chewing...
Right, he's the famous old manager.
Yeah.
That's all I can say about him. That's exactly who he is. And 10 years ago, that would have been just fine. But
now,
the way things are now, it's outmoded, and it's not even fashionable anymore. And already, like the San Francisco scene, because it's creating so much excitement, the record companies are swarming around, but they're all leaving, because the managers and the bands say, no, we don't want to make a fortune, we don't want to be rock and roll stars, we want to make good music, and either you give us the ability to do that, or we don't want anything.
Yeah.
And so those guys are leaving, scratching their heads and wondering, but they'll be back. They always come back because they know that there's dollars involved in it.
Well, what about the radio stations? I mean, all you hear anymore.
The radio stations are our friends.
Yeah, well, why don't they play?
Because our records aren't out yet.
Yeah, on the airplane. They haven't done much with the
album. No, KFRC is playing a lot of stuff off the album.
Well, what about their old album? Was that because...
Their old album wasn't all that good, probably, in those days. I don't know. Well, see, here's the thing about radio stations. Radio stations, there's only one guy in the radio station that decides what's going to be played, and that's the guy called the program director.
Yeah.
And the program director can be anybody. It can be your uncle or your grandfather. He's usually a guy who's pretty much of a disinterested observer. He gets incoming records at the rate of some like 50 a day or something like that, 25 a day, dozens and dozens of records, lots of them all the time.
Yeah.
And he puts down a record and puts a needle on the groove and listens to the first 12 bars of it. If he doesn't like it right then, you never hear of it. It never comes out on the radio. If he does like it, puts on a playlist, you know, there's maybe some quota or something like that. The average radio station is only playing about 30 records at a time. 30 or 40 records, maybe.
You think it's really the like this top 10 business and number one?
Well, that has to do with what's sold, but what's sold has to do with what's heard. So the program directors are the ones that are the cause of a hit or not a hit, because they're the ones that decide whether or not the record gets played.
Well, the monkey's just driving crazy, you know.
Well, when you make a record, you make it for the program director. You know, that's really where it is. When you make a single, you make it for the program director. You make it short, you know, under 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And you make it so that it'll grab his theoretical ear in the first 12 bars.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't do that, the record never gets played. And there's a hell of a lot of good records that never got played for one reason or another.
Well, what do you think of the monkeys?
What am I supposed to think of them? I mean, what do you want me to say?
Well, I mean, why should they be number one? I mean, the music...
Well, who knows? Because their records are pretty good. And they should be good because they have the best, like the best of LA studio musicians. They have good arrangers.
Who does the singing?
I don't know who does the singing. I think that probably on the recent ones, the Monkees themselves do the singing. On the early ones, I understood they used studio singers.
Yeah.
What? How good does a record have to be? I mean, do you know in terms of sales what it has to be number one in the nation on billboards? Or breaking the top 100?
I'm not sure how many a record has to sell. But for example, if you have a record, say, in the top 10 of Billboard, it's a good seller. It's a good record. It's at least a commercial record, you know. This stuff is completely mysterious. You know, there's no telling why any of it happens. There doesn't seem to be any reason why one record should make it over others, because like a lot of records that have a lot of really good music on them don't ever get played.
Well, you've heard your album now, obviously. So what do you think?
Well, I think our album is honest. It sounds just like us at a job.
Yeah.
It even has mistakes on it and stuff like that. But it also has a certain amount of excitement on it. It sounds like us. We felt good when we were making it. We did it in a short period of time, only 4 days. It's the material that we've been doing on stage, you know, for quite a long time. There's not too much fucking around with it as far as recording techniques. There's not too much reverb and stuff like that added to it, except what we use ourselves. The instruments sound good, and it sounds like us. It sounds like a good set, one of our good sets.
Did you write all the stuff on it?
No, some of it's like public domain stuff. And
that one you sang, Little One, or
that's not it.
What do you think is going to happen to the San Francisco scene?
I don't know. I'm not even sure why there's so much commotion.
Trash.
Right, let alone what's going to happen to it. I have no idea what's going to happen to it. You know, I just can't. There's just no way of telling.
Well, you know that all things come to an end.
Sooner or later.
Like Everly Brother type music, and now the Beatles are, the English sound's going out, and now this sound, I think, is starting up.
Right.
What you're doing now. If it goes out, what are you going to go back to bluegrass again?
Well,
in the coffee house?
Who knows? Who knows? I don't know. I'll know that when I get there.
But it doesn't bother you.
No, it doesn't bother me now because I'm not. It's just like the thing I'm most concerned with is what's going on right around me, and what's going on right now, not what's going to happen tomorrow or what happened yesterday.
Well, in that respect, you don't seem very concerned about the stuff that was taken.
Well,
is that because you figure it's done and
it's pointless to worry about it. Like, I can think about it, I can work myself into a big frenzy about it, but somebody stole it, it's gone. You know, I hope they can have a good time with it. I hope we can get it back somehow without having to put anybody in jail. It's not that big of a thing, because we can like afford it to get more, and maybe that's, you know, like some sort of spiritual dues that we paid because we're being successful suddenly. That means that now somebody can steal our equipment and not feel guilty about it because we're making more money than they are. You know, I don't know. There's any number of reasons. I'm not worried about it because it's not my nature to worry about things like that.
Do you think this hate aspiration is sort of like Greenwich Village?
I was never in Greenwich Village, so I don't know. All I know is that this particular scene here is interesting in some ways that no other scene I've ever been in is. It for one thing, the community here like really is concerned about itself and really takes care of itself. Like there are fees, there are like funds being set up to pay for lawyers for the kids that get busted down on the street here. You know, from just anybody. Like, you could be spending a weekend in San Francisco and be out on the street and get arrested and thrown in jail. And if you don't have any money or don't know anybody in town, you're in bad trouble. So we're setting up a thing, an attorney thing. You know, so there'll be an attorney on call for anybody who gets busted.
Is that right?
Like a couple of Sundays ago, everybody in the whole A-Dashboard, everybody who lives out here, went out to the streets, down to Hate Street, with buckets and brooms and mops and stuff, and like cleaned up the street.
Really?
Sure, because the city won't do it.
Mm.
So we'll do it ourselves. And that's the way we feel about it. Like, if the city won't do it, or the government won't do it, or the cops won't do it, or somebody won't do it, we'll fucking well do it ourselves. Because we're all like, we're in a position where we're responsible because we've chosen to be, not because we've inherited it, you know. We started all this from nothing, just people moving in, and decided, let's get a little bit friendly and let's get a little bit closer together, and let's just see what we're trying to do. And what we're trying to do is like live a good life and have things happen in a good way, and not put anybody up tight, you know, or not scare anybody, and not make any enemies with anybody.
Yeah.
But as far as creativity goes, outside of music, really, there hasn't been that much going on.
Well, there never is. There never is. But there is a small, heavily concentrated area of lots of activity. And there is a lot of creative activity. It's not always on levels that you can observe it. Because there are different trends happening now in the things that we used to call the arts. For example, the guys that 6 or 7 years ago, if you were a painter in San Francisco, you never sold anything. You never sold any paintings because nobody in San Francisco buys paintings. There's no place to sell them. Painters can't make any money. But a guy with a light show can make money. The guys with the light shows now are the guys that were painters a few years ago. And they're finding out something new about color and about the eye and about spontaneity. You know, those are all aspects that the plastic arts have never had before. Poster design and printing and those kind of things, skills, you know. And all these posters here, they're the product of a lot of people's work, and that means a lot of people in this area are working at something, are getting some kind of return from it. The people who run the dance halls are doing a thing. The people who are being managers and businessmen for everybody are doing a thing. There's really a lot going on. A lot of people are opening stores. You know, see, like, not everybody is an artist, right?
Yeah.
Not everybody is a creative person, but not everybody has to be a bookkeeper or a businessman in order to make it. They can, like, get into something that turns them on a little and find some way to help it, you know, find some way to do a thing with it. Like, with our scene here, we've managed to employ just about everybody we know in some capacity or another because everybody has something they can do. And that's kind of what everybody's trying to do. Like, we're not trying to make everybody an artist or inspire the creative element in everybody, but we're trying to make it so that nobody has to fucking worry about it or sweat about surviving, you know. If you want to not work for a year so you can try your hand at writing or try your hand at painting or something like that, maybe this will soon be a situation where you'll be able to do that. And that would be mighty nice.
You have a job for Kramer, he wants to be an artist.
I am an artist.
You know, someone told me that they read in the Chronicle or something, someone said Jerry Garcia, and then it's a member of the Hells Angels or something like that.
I don't know about that. I'm not a member of the Hells Angels, although I see a lot of them and they come around pretty frequently.
How do they strike you?
I like them. They're honest and they're out front and they don't lie to you and they don't... you know, they're okay. They're good people. They're brutal, but only you know, their brutality is only honesty. It's not. You have to know a few of them. They're kind of like the cops, in a way. They have very heavy standard, you know, of what they do and what's right.
But according to what you said before, brutality isn't what you.
No, but I'm not talking, their kind of brutality, that's their scene, that's not my scene. You know, they're also capable of not being brutal. And like I say, they're honest, you know, like in their dealings. And they can be depended upon in a funny way. Like, when they had the scene up here, the Bean, you know, there were so many people, I'd never seen so many people in my life.
Yeah.
Really. There were You know, it was really fantastic. I just didn't believe it almost. It was a totally underground movement. It was all the people who were like into dope of any sort, you know, marijuana or LSD, whatever. And everybody turned out in the park, some 20,000 people, really a lot of people.
Yeah.
And everybody was having a good time, everybody was smiling, there was nothing going on, but there was no violence, there was no hassling, and the Hells Angels were, well, one of the things that happened was somebody came along and cut the lines to the PA and the electricity. We were using big generator trucks, you know, and sound equipment. And they got some guys just got together and repaired it, and the Hells Angels guarded the wire, and they took care of the lost kids, you know, they babysat, they did all kinds of shit, they loved it, you know, because they you know, you can hint on them to do stuff like that, and they'll do it, you know, like we're hiring a couple of Hells Angels to guard our warehouse now that this stuff has been stolen, and they'll do it good, you know.
Well. If I were to go up to them and ask them to do something like that, they'd probably pound me into the ground.
Right.
Why?
They might not pound you into the ground. I don't know why. I don't know why they do what they do. I know that they're making a big change, that they're a lot different now than they used to be.
Toward more or less brutality?
Less. Toward less. I mean, they're hanging out in the scene, and they're getting out of their brutal bags, and they're getting to just like taking it easy a little.
You think that they see what you guys are doing and that you're...
Well, they know that we're all doing the same thing. And what we're all doing is saying we don't want the world the way you've got it, you know, the establishment. We don't want all the stuff that you're offering us. We don't want to be successful. We don't want to be super rich. We don't want to be businessmen. We don't want to buy insurance. We don't want to do any of that shit. We just want to have a nice, quiet life and like, have a few good times.
But the Hells Angels are looking out for good times with... violence and
not necessarily, you know, like when they fight and hassle, they mostly do it among themselves.
Well,
that's
if
their
I
scene.
One,
they can do it if they want.
In the ground, I feel pretty bad.
That's true, but you know that you don't go talking to the Hells Angels like that, right? You know, you wouldn't put yourself in a position where you'd get pounded into the ground.
Well,
by the Hells
hope
Angels.
Not, but I mean, I.
Well, I'll tell you this, man, that you can put your mind at ease about. Like, one of them's not going to come out of the clear blue sky and pound you. They'll do it if there's a reason for it.
Well, what if there's four or five of them, and the reason is they want to do it? No, because they
well,
have some fun.
All I can say is that's a hypothetical situation. They don't
have... happens, though. I mean, you read it. Okay, maybe there are stories.
It is. Most of it is stories.
Okay.
Like, the Hells Angels that I know might very well beat the shit out of me sometime. But, I'm not going to worry about what they're going to do sometime, because when they're here, or when they come around, or when I see them, or something like that, they're good guys. They talk to me directly. They don't fuck around with me. They did.
Yeah.
Too much. Where'd they find it?
They found it down the street. You know, the landlord of one of the places.
Incredible.
There you go.
Everything.
Yeah. Well, they're going down to the police station now to find out.
Too much.
What luck.
Too much.
What luck.
Oh, man, that's fucking amazing.
Hey, we'll have a story to tell Bill when he gets back. A yarn just being...
Oh, man.
Hey, Bill, your drums took a trip up the alley and back.
It's
down
incredible.
To the police station.
That's far out.
But we still got to have somebody living down there now. Matthew's the perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what's
the
nice.
So anyway, if I had a warehouse and I asked these guys, you know,
well, as a matter of fact, listen. Here's another similar scene that happened. We once played a job at a ski shop, a very plush ski shop on North Beach. Super rich, all kinds of really rich ski crowd people, you know, jet sitters and what have you, mm-hmm. were there. John Baez was there and stuff like that. And the guy who owned the ski shop hired two Hells Angels to guard the door.
Yeah.
To make sure nobody got in without an invitation. And they did it fine. And then the guy took us all out to dinner, us and the Hells Angels and everybody else out to dinner down around the corner at Original Joe's or whatever.
Yeah.
And we walked in there and, you know, knots of tourists split in horror. And, you know, and this juiced attorney, San Francisco attorney, came over and clapped us all on the back and said, "I'm glad you folks are there." Crazy enough, right. He bought us all wine and, you know, stuff like that. He was really delighted as an old San Franciscan because of the fact that there was, at last, there was some little thing that he could talk about or look at, or some, you know, somebody was taking a fucking chance on the streets, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, if you actually seriously ever wanted to do a thing, you could hire Hell's Angels to guard the door for you or something like that. You can do it. They'll do it.
I'll give you a call first and you can hire them for me. And then, well, I mean, I've talked to a couple and they were just, I mean, I've seen them around and they, I mean, you know, why should they go around pounding people?
They don't want any trouble. They just want to be left alone. And just like everybody else does, really. You know, they just don't want to be hassled and stuff like that. And nobody gets hassled, like, by the police or stuff like that, more than the Hell's Angels do. They bring it on themselves in a way.
Yeah, true.
But, just the same, if you wear a Hell's Angels jacket and maybe have a beard and long hair and wear dark glasses right around in a chopped Harley, that doesn't mean you're going to kill or rape somebody. It means you're different looking. There's no reason why somebody should hassle you. Right?
Mm.
I mean, it's just because you take an extreme stand doesn't mean you should get shit for it. As long as you're not hurting anybody.
Yeah. But so many people, when they see someone with long hair, the description you just gave, that's what they think.
Right, or like the man on the street, more often than not, will try and pick a fight with him or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, smart punk, you know. And then they're asking for trouble.
Oh, brother. Anybody who...
I mean, a drunk could be just as, you know, dangerous as Hell's Angels.
Right, and so can your mother in her car driving on a Sunday afternoon, as far as that goes. You know, I mean, like, you can't worry about what might happen, or you can't, you know, this, the whole thing about danger and stuff like that is like, you know, danger, after all, makes life a little more exciting, I think. I certainly wouldn't exclude anybody. Again, behind the fact that they seemed violent or could potentially be a menace or something, you know.
Well, if the Hell's Angels started swinging at you, what would you do?
Tell you this. I don't know. I'd probably split. I'd run for it.
Yeah.
But I would be less afraid of a Hell's Angel swinging at me than I would be a Marine, for example.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I agree with that.
In fact,
you look like a... Or they look like you. I mean, you just described, you know,
right, that's Angels. Because, like I said, we're in something together. After all, the Hell's Angels and I have something in common. We both smoke some dope, you know, occasionally. And we both are rejecting something, you know. But we want to be left alone. We don't want to hassle anybody. So the Hell's Angels get along fine with me. I get along fine with that. The ones I've met.
Well, why? What exactly are you rejecting? I mean, you want everything to go. I mean, you know, you want things to go all right.
All I'm rejecting are ideas.
What's wrong with ideas? You get ideas.
I'm not rejecting all ideas. I'm only rejecting certain ideas. I'm rejecting the ideas that say that any country has the right to do anything weird to any other country. Hey, it's a big old epiphone.
Crunchy
style epiphone.
Come on, Garcia.
Wait a minute, honey.
Shoot this cookie right out of here.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Got an Oreo.
I reckon you probably would rather.
You win the Oreo. Close.
That
would be
yours?
Yeah.
Wow. Done.
How about you?
Hey, it's sort of here today, gone tomorrow, fella.
Well, I don't know.
Or don't you sort of like living, kind of?
I love it.
I can't quite figure out what's going on here.
I must say, I love it.
No, but as you were saying something about rejecting what?
Yeah.
Ideas.
Rejecting
what
certain ideas. Well, the obvious ones. The ones that everybody's rejecting. You know, the ones that say that I can or can't do something. That some collective organization can go around killing people in my name, right?
Yeah.
But
if there weren't some of these rules, what about people that would go around killing, robbing, taking stuff of yours?
I don't believe there's a need for any of that shit, is what I'm saying.
How's your ass?
I don't believe that there's a need for me to have any more than anybody else has.
I'm not sure what it is. It is
I think people don't you think people have that nature in them to rob, steal, kill?
They obviously must, because it happens. I'm not talking about the robbing, stealing, and killing. I'm talking about the I'm talking about genocide, you know, and war, and
you've got into play.
I think so.
But isn't killing and robbing bad business? It's gotta be.
Yeah. I'd say it's bad business, but it's also a little bit different of a matter. If the guy
it's his responsibility alone. He's taking it on.
Right. If you decide to kill somebody, it's you deciding you're going to kill the guy. It's between you and the guy.
And whether you're not or not, it's up to you.
When somebody tells you to kill somebody in the name of something else, then it's a responsibility for you to say, I'm going to go along with this and kill the guy. Then you're making a decision to do something weird.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing it not for yourself, you're doing it for something that you think might be going on. I couldn't do it. I couldn't kill somebody for anybody else.
Well, if there was a person who could kill someone for themselves, do you think they should be stopped? Do you think they should go ahead?
Well, it would be nice to make it so that killing wasn't a solution to anything anymore.
Yeah, but you can't do that, can you?
Maybe you could. I don't know that you can.
Yeah.
You know.
But until
sure there
there's
might be a way
found, there has to be some rules which have cops, you know, they've got to be around. And
I have no objection, like I say, I have no objection to the cops either. It's like, you know, what can the cops can do to me? They can lock me up, you know. When it gets to where the cops can start killing me, that's another matter. Then I'll start worrying about the cops.
Yeah.
The whole cop thing doesn't scare me or doesn't worry me or put me uptight or anything like that. I think cops are okay.
Yeah.
You know, they can like do their thing differently. They don't have to be. you know, they don't have to be cops all the time.
Yeah, take a little pot now and then.
Well, I'd feel better about it if the cops were also heads.
Yeah. Well, what do you get out of it, mostly? Do you play better under dope, by any chance?
No.
Would you just...
No, but sometimes I feel better.
But it doesn't take your ability away?
No, I don't. Not unless you get completely wasted, but I sort of believe in moderation in all things, you know.
Yeah.
I don't believe in getting... in being obliterated.
Yeah.
You know, I believe in, like... if you want to have something that makes you feel a little better and gives you a slightly different outlook than your normal one, then it's your own business. Not anybody's business but yours.
And as long as it doesn't infringe anybody else's rights.
As long as it doesn't infringe on anybody or hurt anybody or anything like that. With the playing, you know, like, we've sort of experimented with it. Like, some drugs you can play well on, some you can't play well on. Some do things to, like, your sense of time, but, like, the only way we'd ever found out about any of this would be to try it.
Well, when you recorded your record, how were you?
We smoked grass most of the time. That's fairly common. Everybody does it. Rolling Stones, everybody does it. You know, we hear some amazing stories about all of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I don't want to, you know. But that's like, you know, that's what we would do when we were practicing, or that's what we'd do for a gig or anything like that. It was no different than our normal situation. Grass is so much like an everyday thing. It's not like you don't get wasted on it or anything like that. You just like...
What about LSD and the Captain Trip thing?
That's a whole other matter. That, you know, like we've played on acid as well. And that does do things to your tolerance sense. And it does other things. It produces a lot wider scope, like an unimaginably wider scope of ideas that are available to you.
Do you think a lot of your ideas come from these?
No, they just helped what was already there. They just made us more conscious of what was already there, you know, what was potentially there. And like, more consciousness means you have more of an understanding of what you're doing. Having more of an understanding of what you're doing means that you can do it better because you're doing it with that much more of your mind.
Would you never go to Alan or Fillmore on acid, would you?
Not anymore. We used to.
I wouldn't do it anymore because we're in a different position now than we were a year ago. You know, like at this point, the experimentation that we were doing is not a matter of drug experimentation. We're experimenting with music within music. The drugs part, everybody takes drugs. That's for another matter. That's like for my personal scene in my head and how I feel, my attitudes toward things. And like if you know, it's just a chance to like unload, mm-hmm. just take a good look at who you are and what you're doing, and feel reassured about it, or decide that it's time to change yourself or whatever, you know.
Have you always been like this during bluegrass?
Sure. Same thing. Except in those days we're all much cooler about it because it was really scary. I mean, you know, like you get arrested for it. Quieter about it.
It's becoming more common and people are getting more educated about it. You know,
right.
Especially, I found a really interesting thing about this Anslinger guy who's on all these committees.
Right.
You think it'll ever get legalized? Do you think people ever get smart?
I don't know if it'll ever get legalized, but I do believe that the legal hassle about it will diminish greatly. In other words, the laws might not be taken off the books,
but
it's likely that the cops will. Yeah, right. Because they're overlooking it a lot now. They can't help it. They can't help it. There's so much grass. There's so many people smoking grass that if they were to bust people, everybody who they found smoking grass, there wouldn't be room for anybody.
Yeah.
You know, the jails would be jammed.
Sure.
And like
grass is fun.
Yeah. The penal institutions and shit like that have been sending out letters to the cops and stuff like that. No more, you know, we don't want any more grass. It's just ridiculous.
They don't hurt anybody anyway. So.
No, right. I mean, and except for that one thing, nobody's a criminal. Nobody I know is a criminal, except for dope. And that makes us all criminals. So we're all criminals.
Mm-hmm. Can I have one of your cigarettes?
We'll stay criminals until somebody says you're not a criminal.
Dude, I'll steal a cigarette and be a criminal. That would be criminal if I took that cigarette.
Hey, go ahead. I've got packs and packs all around the house. Yeah. Dozens and dozens.
I guess it wasn't very criminal at all, was it?
No.
You put tape on that thing, Mike?
Yeah.
What speed are you recording at?
3 1/4.
3 1/4?
3 3/4.
Oh, brother, what kind of...
It's fine.
It won't have any fidelity, but as long as I don't sing anything, it doesn't matter.
Why don't you play something? We'll speed it up to 7 and...
I've done that before. Oh, you heard that stuff. Did you ever hear that? Did I ever play that in studio?
No, what?
I made a whole bunch of tapes at one time of banjo and guitar, and I tuned them down like an octave from the regular pitch and played at half speed, real slow, and all real complicated, and
do
played
you have
them
some
back.
Of that stuff?
No, I don't have it anymore, but it really sounded great.
Where did it go?
Yeah, where did it go?
I think Sarah might have all that shit. She also probably has all my bluegrass records and all my tapes and all that stuff. My entire past. Right.
Can't you go back to that past and get some of your records at least?
I could, but I don't have a car.
Well, if you get any of those little tapes, could I record some of them?
Sure. In fact, if you can find them, you can have them.
In fact, why don't you go to Sarah and get all this stuff?
I'll do it if you want to.
If you want to, you can. I'll tell you where she's at. Do you know, what is the Skyline thing?
18,000
Skyline Boulevard.
You know
Rancho Diablo is. It's up. You know where the top of the hill is at La Honda?
Yeah, sure.
You turn left there. Yeah, Sky La Honda. You turn left there. You go up the ride road, hardly more than a quarter of a mile.
3/4. It's about
1800 Skyline Boulevard.
Yeah, and just 18, ask for 000. Sarah.
18,000. You know,
and ask her if she has any of the stuff, any of the. Tape, bluegrass tapes. Or
well, what should I say? I mean, you know.
Just tell her who you are and tell her that you've been talking to me and
tell
I said you can borrow them or you know, that you're picking them up for me or something. That, you know, I don't know. Improvise.
All right. And then I'll record it and bring it up, or don't you want it at all?
I'd like to have it. Right. I'd really love to have it. So if you want to take it and record it, record the records and what have you and bring them up to me, that would be really nice.
Right.
That would be really nice.
nice. I don't know whether any of that speeded up stuff was. I just did it on the ends and stuff. Because it took a long time. But it was really funny. I mean, like, I would play runs and do all kinds of really intricate, complicated shit, but I was doing it, like, real slow.
Yeah.
And when I played it back at normal speed, it sounded like a regular guitar because it was an octave higher.
Yeah.
And it was just inhuman. It was so fast and furious and boss, you know, just full of complicated shit.
You had to tune down an octave.
Yeah, in order to have the same tone, in order for it to sound like a guitar. It sounded like the most amazing clean guitar player in the world.
And you said you stuck banjo with
it? Yeah, I also did banjo stuff that way, too. I played banjo tunes. So they'd come back about normal bluegrass tempo, but they'd be incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there'd be all kinds of things that you couldn't possibly finger.
Oh,
you know, and roles that you couldn't possibly play, and, you know, in the course of a normal role, there'd be like 20 added notes and little stuff. You know.
If you ever find that, let me know.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that myself. That was really funny.
Yeah. You didn't say Sarah has that, though.
I don't. No, I don't think. If there's a whole whole box of tapes, it's conceivable that some of that shit might be there somewhere. But I only did it like on rat tapes that I had, you know, just screwing around.
How long ago was that?
Three years. Back when I was really into the banjo.
I've often wondered, what about, couldn't you adapt things like Blackberry Blossom or Million Low Ground the Rock and Roll at all?
I mean, thought of it.
You know, Buffalo Springfield did Salt Creek there.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed that. I really did. I mean, I think it could be done better, but I...
Well, we'll see what happens when I get my banjo going. Maybe we can get into that a little. I hope so.
Because I'd like to, if there's any possibility, I'd like to sit in on so you're... You know, I'd just love to see you play again.
Right.
You know, on banjo.
Right. I don't like my guitar playing.
No! No, but I'm still a banjo. Well, I just bought a Gretsch Tennessee and a new one.
Oh, yeah? How do you like it?
I just kept fooling around with your guild, and it's so clear, and I don't think I'll get a guild. Same price, isn't it?
Probably, roughly, yeah.
I got $100 off this thing at Leo's in Oakland. Right. Get all your stuff there with cash.
Yeah, right, we've got a lot of stuff there.
Yeah,
it's a good place. They get a lot of old electric guitars here.
Yeah, they really got
like, stuff. Bob's got a Telecaster he got from him.
One of the old with the lawn neck?
Yeah, right.
How much did he pay for that?
$250.
Oh, that's so good. But they're hard to get now, so.
They're real hard to get, yeah.
Why don't you play one?
I don't like them.
You don't?
No.
Why not?
Well, I've played this Telecaster next to mine, and it has a lot less power than mine does, and it doesn't have the tone. Yeah. I really like the tone of mine.
Why don't you get a Starfire 5? I mean,
I don't like them. I like the simplest. Well, I don't really need anything special in guitar.
I mean, what's the difference between the 5? It's double cutaway, but what else?
I don't know. I don't know if there might not be any difference at all. I just happen to like that particular guitar. Yeah.
It's a different one than... You must get a new one pretty soon.
Well, that's a new one. Yeah, my last one was just burned out. It was only a year old and it was used. It had holes in it. And the back of the neck was completely worn out.
Yeah. Well, let me know when you start picking up that banjo because I love it.
Well, I've been playing it all along.
Yeah. But you said your rehearsals are poor and that doesn't do any good.
You'll hear it when I play it. I mean, I'll play it on something. Probably on the second album, there'll be some stuff with banjo on it.
But an album, you don't see the guys play.
Well,
sure there is.
No, there is a difference. There's a difference.
No, but how about it sometime? No.
Sure, if you want, just give me a call sometime when I'm starting to use it. Like, give me a call.
I've been dying to do this.
Oh, I don't know how much longer we're gonna be around in this area. Is the thing.
You mean permanent area?
Yeah, you got a nickel.
No.
Never point a gun at someone. Bang. You got a dime?
Go away, go away. Jason, I don't have a dime and I don't have a nickel.
That's
a
torture test.
Can you pass the torture test?
Caillou!
That's the best thing we've got on tape. Well, what's this about not being around?
I don't know how much longer we can be around.
Fuck you!
But, we will be back.
Fuck this guy!
I don't know. I hope so. Someday. I don't care whether or not, you know, whether or not I come back. I mean,
you were born here.
That's true.
No.
But I, you know, I'd like to see the world.
Yeah. Well, you better start. I'll give you a call one of these days when you're born, all right?
Get back to the paper.
What?
Get back to the paper.
Oh, you want to write the psychology paper for me, Jerry?
Do I want to what?
Write the paper I've got to do.
No. Oh, I got a question.
Okay.
You were sort of almost going to say existentialism there a while back,
right?
I know this is impossible to do, but summarize your definition of existentialism.
I can't do it. I can't do it in such a way that it would be any clearer than the term. I would suggest that anybody who wants to find out about it read some Jean-Paul Sartre or Albert Camus. I think that the idea of existentialism is better summarized in like a parable or a story or a novel than it is in terms of ideas. Steppenwolf.
Did you see Blow Up?
I haven't seen it yet. Did you see it?
Yeah.
How do you like it?
Fantastic.
Yeah. I've heard different reports about it.
What's it about?
You have to go see it to understand. I mean, you know, I can't explain what it's about.
Would you like to do a movie, Jerry?
Well, as a matter of fact, when we were in L.A. making our record, we got a movie offer from ABC Paramount.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. We got a movie offer to be in a James Coburn movie, in which he is the psychiatrist to the president. And he runs off from his job on a series of misadventures or adventures or something like that. One of which is to spend a certain amount of time with a rock and roll band, which is traveling around nomadic fashion in trucks and things like that. And it would include, we were actually written into the script and includes speaking parts, the whole thing.
Is that right?
Right.
I mean, would you be in it quite a bit or just...
Yeah, we'd have a pretty long section. We've agreed to do it, provided we have control over the section that we're in. So we might not do it, because they might not want to give that to us. The point is, we don't want to be in a movie unless it's going to be good, and it won't be good unless we do it ourselves. I mean, it won't be the way we want it unless we do it ourselves.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
The airplane's got an article coming up in Look. Do you know anything about it?
In Look magazine?
Yeah.
The photographer, Jim Marshall, took a bunch of pictures here at our house. We had a party here that had... It was us, the Jefferson Airplane, the Silver Messenger Service, Big Brother, and the Holy Company, and the Charlatans, all here. Expressly for the lift photographer, we took pictures on our front stairs, upstairs. We went down to the panhandle and got pictures of the whole group of musicians. Everybody was in full drag. You know. We walked down there. We got movies of the whole thing as well. Actually, that article may expand to an article about the San Francisco scene in general. At any rate, I think we'll be in it if it happens.
What do you think of Grace?
I love Grace. She's a real professional musician, boy. She's just tremendous.
I mean, I like her singing, the stuff she writes.
She writes good songs. She sings really excellently, you know. She's really has fantastic control and discipline. She also plays pretty good piano, and she plays beautiful recorder.
Amazing.
Like on the recorder stuff you hear on the album is her, and on that Coming Back to Me, she plays lines that are just beautiful musical lines.
She used to be in love, didn't she?
I don't know.
Is she married?
Yeah.
Was her husband in the Great Society?
Right.
With brothers too, or something
right.
like that?
Her husband and her brother-in-law.
Is her husband around, or is he in India?
He's playing drums with a group called The Outfit, I believe.
What's happening as far as
for a while? The Final Solution.
Jazz was kind of, you know, the airplane went down to Monterey, did the thing with Jazz Festival, which turned out to be a failure. But there's been a lot of talk about jazz and this stuff kind of intermingling. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know anything about it. I know that a few jazz musicians have called us asking to jam with us, play with us. Virgil Gonzalez called us. Also that some jazz musicians are getting into electric instruments. That there is also a tendency in jazz to some extent toward modal forms and toward toward Indian form, Zaraga form, and westernizations of Zaraga form. And rock and roll musicians are into that. I think that that what's happening in rock and roll is this. The big thing that's happening is lots more intelligent musicians are getting into it. Lots more people that have a lot more to offer musically. And we're starting to think of it as being musical that's valuable. We're not thinking about it as being second-class music. Yeah. And maybe just that attitude will bring a lot of people into it. It's an opportunity for jazz musicians to make money if that's where that's at. And that's a nice thing, too.
Yeah. What?
Well, I guess this is about everything back.
Really?
Yeah, Owsley and Laird and went down the back alley and started talking to the kids, and the kids took them right to where it was. There was some little street gang, and now they got the kids guarding the place.
Really? The street gang?
So you guys took it. And they said that the cops got there and confiscated it, and they're fingerprinting it now.
Go through all
so that. So yeah, it's more on.
Oh, that's good.
But anyway, we need to get the kids to go out to play.
Yeah, that's good. We can give them a little bread for it.
Well, they're now they are a fighting team.
Right.
Laird and Owsley?
Hey, man, you know that rap that Owsley was doing when he was over here?
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did.
I'm amazed he went and did it.
I'm not.
I know, man. That's...
Honestly, it's actually
getting pretty powerful.
Big medicine.
That's your gun.
All of it amazing. Too,
never use it to lay.
Well, if you keep it out of the pillow.
It doesn't, it's just really rickety. I wish I could show you.
How weird.
Yeah. It's close to the goo.
Yeah, you couldn't shoot anything like that. It'd explode.
32?
Yeah.
Pull it back. What's this, a safety?
Yeah. No, it's not the safety.
Sure.
No. That's the thing that makes it so you can pull back the slide.
Oh.
Or something like that. It's not the safety. This is the safety here.
On a Luger, I know.
Watch
I have both of them.
Do you have a Luger?
Yeah.
They're really complicated.
Yeah,
they're beautiful.
So you get one grain of sand in them, that's why they made the P-38s, because you can throw them in the mud and they'll survive.
Right.
It's a 9mm, mint condition, beautiful. All matching numbers.
Oh, really? Yeah, Yorma's got one also that's all matching numbers, mint condition,
right? I bet the clip's not matching though, is it?
The whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole thing. He's really got it. It's beautiful.
Does he collect guns or is he just...
No, that just happened to be one of those things he fell into.
Yeah.
He's always doing stuff like this.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Beauty.
Anything else about what?
Anything you want to ask, right?
Oh, God,
you like
please.
Bloomfield?
Yeah, I like Bloomfield.
You like his style? But you wouldn't like to play this stuff.
Well, I sure would. If I could do it, I'm sure I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't think I would, come to think of it.
I didn't think you would either.
No, he plays a little bit independent of the rest of the band.
That's exactly what I thought.
Right. And I sort of like to play a little more with the band.
Well, why don't you pack it up?
Any summarizing comments about anything?
No summarizing comments, except where can I buy some 32 ammo?
You blow up on your hand.
I'm gonna go out.